This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Over the last 50 years, Central Piedmont Community College has become one of the largest community colleges in the Carolinas. It's grown to encompass six campuses, offering nearly 300 degree, diploma, and certification programs, customized corporate training, and numerous online courses and programs. And all of this was built under the leadership of three people, two men and one woman. In January of this year, Dr. Candy Dietemeyer became the second woman to lead CPCC, taking over from Dr. Toni Zeiss. And though she's been in charge for nearly 11 months, the college is officially inaugurating her this week. And this hour, Dr. Dietemeyer joins us to talk about what she found upon her arrival, her vision for the college, and what she's been concentrating on for the last several months. Welcome to Charlotte. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning to everybody.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks. You said something as I sat down behind this microphone earlier this half hour before we actually started, and you said this reminds you of your days on the radio. I knew that you were a communications major, but that doesn't always mean that people in communications majors ever sit behind a microphone or behind in front of a camera. You did. When?
I did. Actually, in high school in rural North Carolina in Randolph County, I was on the radio for about a year, and it really did help me determine that I wanted to go on and do something in broadcasting or journalism. That was the beginning of my major when I went off to a community college and then on to the university. But then I wound up changing it a little bit and went to public relations, marketing, and communications. It was the best job I've ever had, other than the job at Central Piedmont, of course.
What, being on the radio?
Being on the radio.
What did you do on the radio? I want to hear all about it.
It was a small AM station. Yeah. We converted to country music at the time, which was good because we were kind of an adult top 40 when I arrived there. And I was during the drive time, if there was anybody hopefully listening during drive time on a small AM rural station, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon until about 7:30 when we went off the air. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. I was in a very small, dark room. I got to close the door and flip the mic on like you do and got to say and interact with people that I hoped was listening. And kind of, it was really, again, the best job.
You know what? I don't know when you were in country radio. What years was that? 1980?
Now we're going to tell my age.
80?
I graduated high school in 1986. So that would have been in the 84, 85 time frame. It was just before I graduated.
It may have changed, but I did one night on a country radio station in the late 70s. And it was too hard. You know why it's too hard to work in country radio? The records are too short. You have to work too hard. They're 2 minutes long.
I mean, I did work. I worked hard. That's right.
Once they sell the truck and the dog, the record is over.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I can think back. I think that's when the Judds were breaking and several others. So it was a fascinating time. It really was. Great job.
Your predecessor at CPCC, Dr. Toni Zeiss, he was there for 24 years. That's nearly, I don't know, half the life of the college. What did he tell you about CPCC, assuming that he did tell you something about the school, before you started, about the challenges it faced or what his vision was, where he felt it still needed to go? What did he tell you when you took over?
Well, you know, Dr. Zeiss is one of those people that he will share with you. As you know, he's very positive. Mm-hmm. So he didn't really tell me that there were many things that needed to be tweaked. What he told me was I was being afforded a tremendous opportunity, a great institution. And not just because he had led it, but because the men and the women, the faculty and the staff who worked tirelessly. So we had a long conversation about that. Certainly the growth of the college over the last several years, we talked a lot about why the growth, where that needed to continue. But he also has been gracious about saying, you know, I'm turning over the reins. I've done my time. He's off, as we all know, working to get the Museum of the Bible open here in the next few weeks. And so we've talked infrequently because we've both been so busy, but stayed enough in touch to say, how's it going for you and how's it going for me? So really just helped me focus on the fact that I was taking over the mantle of something tremendous.
You come on board at a time when a lot of the leadership positions in a number of different areas in Charlotte have been changing fairly rapidly. We have a new city manager. We have a new head of the hospital system. We have a new head at CMS. We have a new head at the health department. All of the people that left in those roles had been fairly well known in many cases and participatory in a lot of different things. Do you see your role expanding outside the ivy halls of CPCC?
Yeah, I think in the last 10 months, I have spent the first few months inside. I was very intentional about doing that. Mm-hmm. But I am serving on a number of boards and getting out. I've met all of the individuals other than the new health director, I think, that you just mentioned, and have begun trying to form important relationships, not only based on our roles, because they're very good people. And I will tell all of your listeners, having met all of them, their hearts are in the right place. I think we've had some really honest conversations about where we are in our city and in those institutions and how we want to move things forward. Mm-hmm. And really that there are a lot of great things going on in Charlotte, and how do we make sure we're having those conversations as well.
You mentioned that you are a graduate of a community college.
I am.
And now you're the president of a community college, and in between you went and got a four-year degree and then a master's and a doctorate, et cetera, et cetera. Why did you start at a community college?
Well, I'm the fifth of five children, mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of that. My parents, my father was in construction all his life. My mother was a bookkeeper. They never went to college, mm-hmm. but I don't ever recall a conversation in my home that college was not an option, regardless of with which child you were in that number. So I always grew up knowing that that was where I was headed. So when we left rural North Carolina, I was raised in Florida. Spent some formative years, as I like to say, in rural North Carolina, in Randolph County. I went to middle school and high school there. So I moved from really the big city of Florida to the rural part of North Carolina, and it was a game changer for me. It opened my eyes to so many different things. When we moved back to Florida 2 days after high school graduation, I moved back to a city that was trying to develop. And to be honest, I was we were not ready to do it financially to send me to a four-year institution. I spent a lot of time working, mostly part-time, almost full-time while I was in high school. And I got busy doing some other things. My mind was not attuned to the things that I should have been excited about in high school. And so when we moved to Florida, I was not ready to go off to a four-year institution. But I knew that I wanted to go to college, and in my community where we moved back to Florida, there was a community college who had a rural, regional affiliation with the University of South Florida. It was a perfect fit for me. It was 10 minutes from my house, and so financially, academically, it was perfect, and so I could continue to work almost full-time, which I did, and go to college. So I'm really the story. I know our student story very well. You know, many of our students are working part-time or full-time jobs. So it is one of the most important aspects of who I am, because it helped my trajectory. Mm-hmm. And I never thought I would become a president, but I'm grateful for the opportunity.
I was going to ask you what the experience of being a student at a community college has done for you as the president of several community colleges, not just this one.
Correct.
You came from a community college. What that experience, what kind of insight that gave you? Let's just start with that.
Well, I think the insight that it gave me was, like most of our students, I was on financial aid. Mm-hmm. I applied for financial aid. I took out loans when I went off to the university to try to finish out. I wound up taking a developmental class, which many of our students do. I never thought that would happen. Developmental class is so you're not a career and college ready. You're not at a college level in a course. And so you need to kind of take a prep class to get you to a college level academically. So I think it was a math class. It was never my strong suit. And so I wound up taking what we call a college prep developmental course in order to get ready for my first college level course in mathematics. And that's really the challenge for many of our community college students even this day. And then trying to work part-time or full-time depending upon what was going on in my life at the time. Again, probably 50%, if not more, of our students are trying to do that. So it really prepared me that as I moved through the ranks in community colleges, whether I was an academic advisor or I eventually became the chief student services person and a vice president or a dean of student life, and then on to academics, I really took that as trying to think about a student's experience when we make decisions. What does it mean for this to happen? What is this policy? How does that impact a student that wants full access to our programs or to what's going on campus? And so I think those experiences helped. I did not get to participate in student life. I think that's a huge thing that I've been an advocate of. And so in part of my trajectory in community college leadership, I was a student government advisor. and I got to work with students. And that aspect of what we do is really important.
A lot of young people who go to community colleges go for a lot of different reasons. They go because mm-hmm. they want to get a job. They don't plan to go to college, but they want to be trained for a job, which is something that CPCC is really involved in. And also they want to defray some of the costs of a four-year college education by getting an associate degree and then going on to a four-year college when they're ready. And that seems to be your story. And it seems also to me that you are like the shining example of why these young people go to community colleges. They want to change their lives. They want to get ahead. Not only did you change your life and get ahead, you're the president of the college, for crying out loud.
Right.
I mean, what does that, what kind of a message do you think that sends to the students at CPCC?
I meet a lot of students who, I must tell you, these young people, and even our older students, those coming back doing kind of what I like to say is life transformation or retraining, they're so grateful when they get an opportunity to visit one of us or to visit with me. They always, they're so gracious, they thank me for the opportunity. And I really am humbled that I get to meet many of them because they're working so hard. They are working part-time, full-time, some 2 and 3 jobs. It's been humbling to become president, and as you said, having been in this role somewhere else, I thought when I reached that I was just still as hungry to do the right thing for students. I never thought I'd get to come to Central Piedmont and move to Charlotte. I try every day to make my family proud, my parents, because this is important, and so. Those students that I get to meet, I tell them that they just need to keep working hard. Mm-hmm. I stand before them at various groups and say, whatever you decide you want to be, it's possible. I didn't think I'd start in community colleges and become the president. My goal really was to just do a good job, maybe become an academic dean or a student services person, and I was going to be happy. Other people believed more in me than I probably believed in myself. Mm-hmm. And that push kind of helped. And so I think it's my job to continue to push our students.
You spent 24 years in higher education, 22 at community colleges. That's a long time. Tony Zeiss was here for 24
right.
years. So with all this time at community colleges in North Carolina, I think in Kentucky and in Florida, you've learned a lot about community colleges and how they work. How would you describe, for people who don't know, the function of a community college today in the 21st century?
Well, one of the things I hope I'll say on Friday is while we continue to change and try to be very advanced, make sure we bring all the technologies that students want to interface with, we're in a different environment than when I started 25 years ago. 25 years ago when I started in a community college, it was very much one-on-one because we were smaller. Community colleges were still trying to come into their own. Now we're offering everything online, and we are offering things hybrid, and students want it when they want it, how they want it, as quick as they want it. And so it's a very different, what I call, business model. And we're not comfortable in academics sometimes referring to ourselves as a business, but we are, and we have to be innovative. And Central Piedmont is the most innovative institution probably in the country. And so what we have to do today is very different than what we did.
Innovative how?
I can walk into any platform or any of our academic programs, and we are cutting edge, whether we are talking mechatronics engineering or we go over to some of our advanced manufacturing and I can put on the what I call the goggles, so to speak, and be in a virtual situation so that they can help design what they're going to create on an advanced manufacturing floor, whether it's something that we're doing in non-destructive engineering, which most people, I have to explain what that means, which is the technician that goes out to make sure our bridges and some of our roads are safe once they're built. And those are really important. And so I think we're, again, one of the most highly advanced institutions in the country. So it's very different than when I started.
A lot to talk about Central Piedmont and also about Dr. Candy Dietmeyer, their new president, who will be inaugurated on Friday. We'll talk about why so late in just a moment at Charlotte Talks. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Tom Bush Law Group, a family law firm devoted to protecting the client's best interests, including alternative dispute resolution to family law cases. Serving Charlotte for over 30 years, TomBushLaw.com. And Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, featuring a steak and wine menu for business meetings, private parties, or dinner. Uptown location open for lunch and dinner, South Park for dinner. More info at Ruth's-Chris.com. Last week, most of the remaining documents surrounding the Kennedy assassination were released after more than 50 years, and despite countless investigations and books, we're still not satisfied with the conclusion that Lee Harvey Oswald pulled the trigger. So we're going to look into some of the stranger conspiracy theories that float around America in the first half of tomorrow's program. And then the creator of the hit podcast, Lore, shares what's behind horror stories and folktales. Ooh, spooky Halloween. Tomorrow at 9.
I'm Tom Asbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, a big Republican tax plan is coming. We'll ask what to look for and who wins and who loses. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Join On Point coming up from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte Talks, here on Listener Funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Dr. Candy Dietemeyer is our guest. She is the new president of Central Piedmont Community College. I say new, but she's been on the job since January, and this is her inaugural week. I think Friday is the big day. They're closing the streets. There'll be parades why so late? Why, you're 11 months into the job. They've just decided to say, okay, you got the job. What's up with that?
I know. No, it's actually about 10 months going into 11th month. You're correct. You know, this is pretty typical. We're pretty traditional. We were just talking about how advanced we are, right? Uh-huh. But we're still very traditional in academics as well sometimes. So it's typically about 8 months in, 9 months in. We may be just a shy late. That's probably, I wouldn't say my fault, but I wanted to make sure the events around this week are really focused on students and the community. And so we had a number of conversations, and I said, as long as it's focused on those things, then I'm all in. I had been inaugurated at my last institution as its president, and so it is a big deal. But it needs to be a very important event for the community and for the college, but more importantly, our students. So that's what the week's going to be about.
Okay.
Friday's just the pomp and circumstance, okay.
How
right?
are you making it that?
Well, every campus will be holding some student life events. So today, part of what I'll do is I'm going to go over to one of our campuses, actually to the Levine campus, and we're going to have our student government is and all of our students are going to participate in making sandwiches for the homeless. Mm-hmm. And then there'll be several events throughout the week. We're going to dedicate a building this week, which will serve students from GED and our adult high school programs all the way up to a lot of our other programs. So that'll be part of the events a weeks. And so we're just going to make it all about what we do, which is students and the community, serving our community.
As I said at the beginning, Central Piedmont has 6 campuses. It's one of the largest, I read, one of the largest community colleges in the Carolinas. And I'm just curious, what's larger? Seriously.
Well, Wake Tech Community College is larger than Central Piedmont. Central Piedmont used to be the largest in the North Carolina system for many years.
Largest in terms of numbers of students?
Number of students served, correct. And so Wake Tech over the last couple years, because of their growth as well, and Charlotte certainly has had a tremendous amount of growth, so they've outpaced us just a little bit. But, you know, it needs to be less about the number than it is about what we're doing.
Right.
And so while we are the largest, I think part of what we're focusing on is how to make sure that we're meeting our students and our community needs.
I'm sure you did your homework before you came here and learned everything you could about the college and the city of Charlotte and how the two interact with each other. But were there any surprises? Were there things that you didn't anticipate about the school or the job or the strengths or the weaknesses of as you saw them and what you've discovered now that you've been here for 11 months, 10 months?
Well, I'll tell you, most of my conversations internally with faculty and staff have been very positive. Mm-hmm. And we've done a number of things to kind of try to hear all those voices and try to give me as much information and kind of listen to the middle, as I like to say. Really, nothing surprised me. What has been really I've been excited about is that the faculty and staff want to focus on two really primary things. We do so much at Central Piedmont. We've been the cutting edge for our system on a lot of state reform in many of our program, how we offer things to students across our state. System will come and ask Central Piedmont to pilot those things. We're in the middle of a couple of pilots now. But also on the national level in terms of national reform, what do we need to do better in order to make sure we're making an impact on students? So really the faculty and staff have said we just like to focus on student completion And in order to do that, we want to focus on student retention. So that means everything we're doing inside the classroom and outside the classroom to afford students the opportunity to stay at pace and finish what they've come to us to do so that they don't have to stop out for financial reasons or because something happens in their family or they have to take another job. And so nothing has warmed my heart better than those conversations. So I wouldn't say anything really surprising. I've been really excited about what I've heard from faculty and staff and the community as well.
Dr. Zeiss was on the show many times in the past, as I guess you could imagine, was very proud of the work he'd done in coordinating with the businesses in the area and designing programs at CPCs that help train their workforce. And workforce development has, in fact, become a major component of not only CPCC, but community colleges around the country. And not everybody's on board with that, I got to tell you, because I've heard from people in the course of doing these conversations with Tony Zeiss. Some would say that companies are outsourcing training that they used to pay for and putting it on the backs of taxpayers. What's your take on that?
You know, I think our role and responsibility is around a couple of things. Our mission is, first of all, we were talking earlier, when community colleges were started, it was supposed to be an open door, right? Because we don't require an SAT or an ACT. We'll take anybody. We do everything from completing a high school diploma to corporate and continuing education. And so if the door is going to be open, then I would say part of our mission has to be making sure students finish a GED or a high school diploma. They come to us, get a certificate diploma or a two-year degree. Part of that has to be about helping businesses grow. It has to be about helping companies come here because we want everybody to come to Charlotte, right, and bring their businesses. It's good for the community. It's good for economic development. It's good for our businesses. And so who better to be in the middle of that than the community college where we are subject matter experts in many of those trades, many of those fields. And if we aren't, we have access and the ability to go find that talent to help that company either grow their business or, as I said, bring a company here so that Charlotte can grow and that the members of our community can have economic mobility, who can have a better wage, whatever it may be. So I wouldn't say that I would want to get into a long argument with those individuals, but I would say that I think if they wanted to sit down with me, I could probably articulate in a way why it's really mission essence for us.
We've had a fellow on this program by the name of Marshall Brain, which is a great name for a guy who's really smart. But I think he's at NC State or maybe Wake Forest, but I think it's NC State. He's on the program tomorrow to talk about something completely unrelated to this. But when he was on in the past, he talked about the end of jobs. Mm-hmm. And he really believes that in 20 to 25 years, there won't be any jobs. Everything will be automated or computerized. And the point of this is that we need to start thinking about a new economy that doesn't require people to have a job. Because if you don't work, you can't pay for the goods that the robots are producing. I don't know whether that is ever going to come to pass, but it certainly part of it is. Are you thinking about that at the community college level, at a community college that has dedicated itself to training people for future jobs that may not be there once the students graduate?
Well, I'm not sure that I would completely agree with him. I think because I'm in the life transformation business, right? So I'm in human capital. Uh-huh. My job is to make sure that everybody who wants to access a better way, we have that available. I'm back to the open door. And so I'm not sure I would completely agree with him. However, Central Piedmont is making sure that we are high tech, high touch in a lot of our programs. So even some of the work that we do with some of our major manufacturing is not, or major manufacturers is not necessarily everything that we did 50 years ago in a manufacturing floor, right? And I think some of our students and some of those folks counseling those students still think that some of those manufacturing or factories, as we like to call them, still look the same way that maybe they did when I was growing up. And they don't. Something like a Siemens, who many people know we have a strong relationship, their plant is clean. It's beautiful. It's automated. So we're making sure that students understand high tech, high touch, because those advanced manufacturing machines really do require that kind of training.
So in this world today, aside from knowing how to run a machine, if you're going to a community college specifically to go on to a job, and you've set up these training programs for specific organizations to get their future employees ready, aside from knowing how to do that one job, screw on that one widget, and I'm being really oversimplified here,
right,
what are these companies looking for? What do they want from a prospective employee?
Well, I think we're back to some of the things that we've always wanted, which are some what we call soft skills. It's still important that somebody come to work on time. It's still important that somebody have great customer service. It's still important that people can follow great direction and be good leaders. So we hear a lot of that from companies. It's not just about whether or not they can, as you said, turn the screw or do something technological. It's, can you be a good employee and be a good communicator? Can you come to work on time and do all those things? So we try to customize that. We also try to braid that into our curriculum across the board so that we're also working on the person, right? We're working on people so that they can be better at their jobs.
How big a challenge is that? Because a lot of these folks who come in have not had success in high school or grade school. It's been a struggle for many reasons. We don't have to go into all the reasons. But it's been tough. And many of them need a kind of a life education to get them to the point where they can use the education you're about to give them to get a job and be successful in the world. How do you handle that? Because there are a lot of people who don't have life skills, don't know how to say good morning, look you in the eye, shake your hand.
Sure. Well, I think that that's why we're in such a great place at Central Piedmont, because we do have great faculty and staff who work really hard together to make sure that we're taking those human elements, the things that we know we need to work on with individuals. We're taking the life skills. We're taking the workforce development skills. We're taking the things that students need to understand before they transfer to a four-year institution and kind of contextualizing those, and our faculty and staff are working hard to make sure we put those in every piece of what we're doing. We have a critical core at Central Piedmont Community College, so we work on just those things. How do we make you a good communicator? How do we make sure that you know technology? So there's
does that happen in regular classes, or is that a separate class that devoted to that?
We embed that in those classes. Okay. We embed that throughout our curriculum, regardless of program. And we talk a lot about workforce development. We talk a lot about advanced manufacturing, and we talk a lot about the things that we're doing there. And when you ask me the question about automation and whether there will be jobs, you know, I think sometimes we forget all the things that we do, all the jobs that are out there. You know, we still need to train a good nurse. I'm not sure I want a robot at my bedside, right? We still need great public safety members of our community, fire, police, EMS, which we do that training. We still need early childhood providers. You know, we talk a lot about that right now in Charlotte, about we want parents to have access to good child care, not only affordable, but good child care. So I would prefer my child, when she was in early childhood, that person has a good early childhood provider. So there's lots of things across that, what I call job continuum, that we can't forget, that I don't think should or can be automated.
What's the breakdown of students who are coming to you to go on to a four-year college and get a four-year degree versus people who are coming to you to be trained specifically for the workforce?
You know, it shifts, but I would say we're about 60-40 right now, 60% trying to go on for a four-year institution, okay, and about 40 going into the workforce. But our demographics have changed too. You know, a few years ago, our age would have been in the mid-30s. Now our median age is in the early 20s, and part of that is because of our four middle colleges, lots of students taking advantage of Career and College Promise, where they're taking classes while they're in high school as well. So that's driven the age down. The economy's better, so many people are back to work, thank goodness. So we're also dealing with a different demographic. So probably 60 want to transfer and 40 working towards going in right into workforce.
Because we have two email questions and or comments from Jim, who's been listening to us. And one of them is, contractors plead and beg for trained men and women, he says, for many vocational careers. Are we overemphasizing college prep work and underemphasizing vocational education?
Well, that's the alternative, what you were just asking me, right? And I do not think so. I think we've got a great partnership out working on construction trades and many of the others out at our Harper campus, and trying to meet the needs that we're hearing from many of those contractors and many of those businesses about, with all the building going on, making sure we have a talent pipeline that's ready and skilled to be able to execute on those jobs. So I don't really think so. So it, again, back to the conversation earlier, which way do we want to go? I think we put a lot of emphasis on vocational training, on workforce training, but I think there is a place still for students to go on to a four-year institution. And it's the balance of that.
Jim, part two of his comment or question is, Dr. Dietemeyer says that most CPCC classes are available online now. And that's good. Then why are we spending tens of millions of dollars to build and rebuild huge fancy buildings with the high costs of maintenance and upkeep? You're opening a major building, or you're breaking ground on the biggest building yet this week. Shouldn't online education reduce the need for brick and mortar?
Well, I think there's a balance, which is one of the things as I've come in, we have had a lot of conversations about. Many of our online classes are hybrid, which means the student does touch down on campus. Mm-hmm. We do offer some degrees online that don't require you to come to campus. But there are some services on campus that I think students need to access. Again, back to, you know, about 47, maybe 40% of our students are still first generation. And so online's not going to really be the best for them. At the beginning. It may be eventually. And so what do I mean by that? That means that they haven't ever had anybody in their household or in their life that's ever been to college, so they don't know how to navigate. And being an online student is very challenging. It's not the best for everybody. And so different learning styles.
Challenging because you have to have the discipline.
You have to have the discipline. And many of our students, if you've been first generation or you've never had technology in your home, as many of our students still do not, they need to be on campus in front of a faculty member. And again, back to some of that tradition, those traditions work. So I think there is a balance. It's something that I appreciate he has pointed out, but we have to have balance between both.
The other aspect of, it seems to me, online education from somebody who never had that opportunity because it didn't exist when I went to college, is that this would be a bonanza for somebody who really wants to have an open book test.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think over the years we've put a lot of things in place technologically to make sure that students are not advancing themselves through alternative options. How about that? Or someone else's help. But and I think we've done a fairly good job at that in higher ed. It's difficult.
I know a lot of the students who come to community college, some come because they want to defray the cost, but some come to you because they're not ready academically to go to college, and they're going to use you as a stepping stone to do that. What's the percentage of students who come to you who are not academically prepared, and how unprepared are most of those people who come to you? I mean, do you look at them and go, what's wrong with CMS?
No, I don't ask that question because I think it's a trap question, to be honest with you. I have to go back to why I do this work. Community colleges were established because of the open door, and it's not just about who might be underprepared. We still have a lot of students who go into developmental, those courses where I talked about they're not quite career and college ready. But it's not just the student who's leaving CMS. We have students who are coming back who haven't been in high school in a long time or who need to come and finish out that high school credential first and then traverse over to us, right, to start those workforce courses or to go on to a four-year institution and get their first couple of years. So I think about every student and the opportunity that we need to provide, because if I keep looking at where they came from or what the issues were, it takes me off mission. Right. And so my mission and my purpose is to take every person and to try to think about how to get them to where it is that they want to go. And so I think about the 3,000 international students that have come to us. I can't think about, well, why aren't they, if they have to take a development, why aren't they prepared? I mean, they come from 150 different countries. I want to take everybody who comes to us and make sure that we provide them the best opportunities, the best student experience, and put them on the path that they want to get to.
But somebody has to look at them and their academic record and their abilities to write or read or calculate if they're in some thing that needs math, and determine how they need to be caught up.
And we do that at the beginning. We do a placement test, which we call NCDAP, and it assesses what their math skills are, what their reading level is, what their English skills are. And that helps us determine whether or not they need to go into a developmental course before they can hit that first college-level course or whether they're academically prepared.
And once they do, how rigorous are your academic requirements? I only have about 20 seconds here.
Well, we're Central Piedmont Community College, so of course there's high academic rigor, regardless of where they're going to go. So,
Dr. Candy Dietemeyer is president of Central Piedmont Community College, with lots of things to talk about. One of the things that they're working very seriously on is upward mobility. We'll talk about that next. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and NC Warren, presenting Clean Path 2025, a strategy to slow climate change, save money, and create jobs with local solar power and battery storage. ncwarren.org. And Progressive AE, whose merger with Charlotte-based AI Design Group creates a more diverse full-service design firm. AI Design Group adopts the Progressive AE name on November 1st. More at progressiveae.com. Well, a big Republican tax plan is coming, and during On Point in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, Tom Ashbrook and his guests will talk about what to look for with a panel of experts, and they'll talk about who wins and who loses in this tax plan that's coming up in about 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, and we will continue our conversation with Dr. Candy Dietmeyer from CPCC in just a moment. Stay with us.
The bus. Not so forgiving when you're running late, is it? And for that matter, neither is your boss. But Morning Edition starts your day with news that is ready to go when you are.
Roads, they're still flooding. Shops are shuttered. I mean, everyday life is at a halt.
Leaders have not promised any kind of urgency on a DACA fix.
Listen to Morning Edition every day to catch the latest, even if you caught a few extra Z's.
I'm Marshall Terry. Join me weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is the recently new president of Central Piedmont Community College. She's been in the job since January. This is her inauguration week, Dr. Candy Dietmeyer. She comes to us from directly from Eastern North Carolina?
Northeastern
North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte has a problem with upward mobility. We discovered this not so long ago, and I think it was Harvard University did a survey on this and said that if you are born poor in Charlotte and you stay here your whole life, chances are you will die poor. There's no opportunity to rise through the ranks, which shocked a lot of people, and it's a bad mark on Charlotte. So CPCC, I know, is taking action along with the Opportunity Task Force, which has worked toward addressing this challenge. And their report talks about the impact of segregation and racialization and the role it has historically played and continues to play in the lack of opportunity. How are you working with them to address this deficit?
So as you know, the task force released its report early spring, and out of that we formed the Leading on Opportunity Council. It's kind of the implementation group, the council. And so I was asked by Andrea Smith and James Ford to participate in that, given the role of the college in many of these initiatives. And so really, I think the sweet spot for Central Piedmont in that work will be around Career and College Ready. But also there's some needs around early childhood. And while that's about access, we are a provider in terms of training. So I think we'll have a space in there. But one of the things that I think Central Piedmont has done well in addressing that is I went to the release of that report. I was very new to the community, mm-hmm. was not here when the report was released. And I remember Ophelia Garman-Brown and Dee O'Dell standing up and saying, please make sure you read all 92 pages of the report. And perhaps it's because I'm an educator, I went home and I read all 92 pages, which mm-hmm. I think we all really, if we have a heart about this work or want our city to be better and our community to be better, we should read all 92 pages because it does tell a story. So going back, I said to our team, our cabinet, and really our faculty and staff, is we took the report and we looked at where we intersect. And so we've had a chance to do that over the last few months. And so we have been focusing on a couple of different things that I think will and continue to help move the needle. One I'm very excited about, which is the Opportunity Scholars Initiative. It is a program that we bring students from the Title I high schools into the college, full scholarship, full tuition, and we started that this past summer.
Is
we
this had the $1 million in scholarships?
It is. Mm-hmm. It's actually 1.5, almost $1.5 million that we've been able to raise between the Howard Levine Foundation, Cato Corporation, Bank of America, and Leon Levine Foundation, and some private philanthropic partners as well. And so we started this summer with 42 scholars. It was the most I think impactful moment that I've had in a very long time in higher ed.
Why?
I met 42 young people from those Title I high schools, and we had a ceremony back in the summer. So they went through what we call Summer Bridge. It's a very intentional program where we tell them how to navigate college. We give them a laptop to go through this the next 2 years, and we're going to, as I said, these donors are going to pay their tuition and make sure.
Are these students out of high school? Or
they are, directly from one of those Title I high schools. Mm-hmm. Impactful because back to what you said earlier about the intelligence and the artificial intelligence and the human capacity of things. And I want to remind your listeners, I said I'm in the human capital business. I'm in the life transformation business. That's what I've spent my life working on. And I met these young men and women, and as they crossed the stage, much like many students I've met in my 25 years, very humble, very excited, but very demure in some ways. Some could not look me in the eye. And I smiled at every one of them and shook their hand and told them to stay the course. And we've got some great men and women working in this program to make sure that we're touching base with these students every day. Mm-hmm. What do they need? How is it going? And so this program is going to, I think, be transformational. And so I would like to see it not be $1.5 million. I'd like to have $5 million to do it, to be able to advance it, to offer it to more kids that are coming
These
out.
These are full scholarships.
They're full scholarships for 2 years.
How do you choose the students who receive those scholarships?
So we have coaches and career counselors on the ground through our student outreach program. Many of these students were identified because they had already showed some kind of interest in some trajectory. They were participating in our Career and College Promise program. So we went right into the high schools mm-hmm. looking for them. They did an interview. And so, again, using our talent out there on the field who know these students best.
According to the Opportunity Task Force, these scholarships help recipients earn, quote, a 2-year career-focused degree, which will lead to meaningful family-supporting employment. Do you hope that any of them lead to further college education, a 4-year degree, or just taking them out of high school for 2 years and putting them in a job 2 years later?
So we want it to be life-sustaining. We want it to be meaningful. So it would be great if they would hit the workforce, and then if they so choose, that company might help them advance. But this is big step, mm-hmm. right? Not mm-hmm. little step, not first step. This is big step. And one of the things that I've said throughout my career is, if you're in the life transformation business, especially when you're dealing with economic mobility, if I can get a student across the stage and get them into a sustaining wage. We have at the college potentially not only changed one life, but we've changed the potential fabric of a family. We've changed life trajectory.
And this is the inaugural group of these students?
It is.
So you don't know where they're going to end up yet?
We don't. It's just now first beginning. Semester, we're halfway through the semester. In fact, checking on them, I'm sure they are daily mm-hmm. or weekly. And so we'll see how the first semester goes. Mm-hmm. We've promised the funders that we'll let them know. And so I think all eyes are on them. But more importantly, you know, this is 42 lives.
Is the funding in place for the next 42?
Yes. So we have funding in place to continue this group as well as the next group. But, you know, 42 out of 5 graduating classes is still significant. But if we could open this up some more, we would love to do that.
Another area that the Opportunity Task Force sees a need is in the quality early care and public pre-kindergarten education. And they say that access to that is a game changer. We've done many programs on this, and if a lot of these kids come to first grade with a deficit, no one's ever read to them, no one's ever really spoken a lot of words in time to them, so their vocabularies are less, et cetera, which really underlines their success in the first 3 or 4 grades. So CPCC is involved in working toward that goal. How?
Well, we offer a program in early childhood education, so we are advancing that hopefully by providing career training to individuals who want to go into providing early childhood care. It's very meaningful work. One of the things that I hope we'll continue to work on as a community is the salaries of those individuals. I couldn't quote it right now, but they need to be advanced. We want to keep the right people in those jobs who are working alongside of our important children and the future of our community. And so we are working in that and making sure that we're providing the best training for those individuals who want to do this as a career. It's a very meaningful career.
You're also working with family literacy at 6 elementary schools around the city with high populations of non-native speaking parents. Are these ESL classes, or is it more to it than that?
Well, it is ESL classes, but it's also about connections. And so we are trying to provide that in those non-speaking communities. ESL training, working with kids, again, back to making sure kids feel like they have a trajectory. So it might just be one thing. We go in and we're going to teach ESL to a parent, or we're going to work with a child. But it's about building that community and making a connection to this is the first step in many steps toward hopefully a better career or a better education, a better career, better trajectory.
How long has that been going on?
Several years.
So what's your success like? How would you describe the impact of it?
Well, you quoted that we're in 6. We're doing ESL training throughout our community. I would say we're very successful at that. We have a great team over there, and we just have to continue to do more.
Tom emails, as the parent of a CPCC freshman, we initially thought CPCC was the best place for our student. The strength of the academic program, the convenience, and the cost were all appealing. Now we're second-guessing our decision. Our student attends one of the smaller campuses and is the youngest person in most classes. There's a lack of a large, young adult peer group that one would find in a traditional four-year institution. How would you address that issue?
Well, community colleges are very diverse. We do not take just a student coming out of high school, and, you know, we take everybody. And so one of the things I would say to that parent, I'm not sure which small campus they're going to. Many of our students go to very different campuses. You know, they traverse throughout the region and throughout Charlotte and all of our campuses to access their courses. I'm back to student life. I would encourage his or her daughter or son, I'm not sure if you said, to get involved in student life, if that's something that they can do. That is really where a lot of our young students and some of our older students get involved. They get involved in student life. They make connections through other student life groups of varying interest. Affinity groups are formed out of that. We have so many other clubs.
So talk about that, because it seems to be at a four-year college, that's fairly easy to find those opportunities.
Right?
You go to the student union, and there you are. There are clubs everywhere. How do you do that at CPCC with six different campuses, some of which, I'm told at least, concentrate really on business, and so a lot of adults, 20, 30-year-old, 40-year-old adults go there. How do you find that kind of student life if you're an 18-year-old freshman?
Well, all of our campuses have a student advisor or student government life office. So I would just encourage all of our students who are not involved to go to our student services area, mm-hmm. ask for the person who's kind of working in those ranks, and they'll put them in touch, and students can apply to be in a leadership role or just get involved. Again, I'm going to be out almost every campus this week, minus a couple. And so there'll be lots of events going on. So perhaps if the father is listening, I think it was a father, perhaps they can get involved and try to find a better path.
What is your percentage of full-time to adjunct faculty?
You know, I brought that because I thought you might want to ask me that. We have about, we have about 3,000 people employed at the college.
Mm-hmm.
Full-time faculty is almost 400, and then we've got about 1,100 part-time faculty. Our staff is about the same kind of ratio. We've got about 800 staff and 600 part-time staff. So it's a big operation throughout mm-hmm. those six campuses and three centers.
As you well know, there have been complaints by adjunct faculty members at many colleges and other institutions of higher learning about essentially their slave labor,
mm-hmm.
That a lot of the instructional capacity of the school is being pushed on their backs, while other full-time faculty teach fewer and fewer classes and get paid full-time salaries with benefits, while these people do not,
mm-hmm.
and they're asked to do more and more and more. So aside from actually standing in the classroom, preparing a lesson, teaching the class, grading the papers, what are adjunct faculty being asked to do?
You know, I don't know that I have a better answer than that at Central Piedmont. We do ask them to get engaged. We want them to be engaged in anything that they choose. But our part-time faculty are engaged with our full-time faculty, looking at curriculum, et cetera. But typically, unless something's different that I haven't been told at Central Piedmont, we are asking those folks to just teach their classes, engage with students. They do help around campus if we ask them to do. They can serve on committees if they so choose. But many of our full-time faculty are leading mm-hmm. On those curriculum issues.
But are they being asked to counsel students? Are they being asked to do extra work for developmental purposes, et cetera?
Yeah, they're asked to do office hours just like any faculty and make themselves available to students.
They're not compensated for that?
As part of their contract. They're compensated just for their course. It's an expectation that every faculty member, as part of their course, will be available to do office hours and advise students outside the classroom if they're having issues with that course or need help.
How much of your funding goes toward administration versus instruction?
I don't know that I have that in front of me today, so I couldn't answer that for you.
Several years ago, mm-hmm. You guys, the CPCC, took over WTVI, which was a struggling public television station that was owned by the county, and you folks took it over. How's it doing?
Well, as I understand it from my history lessons over the last few months, WTVI was in some financial concerns when we took them over. I'm happy to report that's not the case today. At least we're in the black.
Mm-hmm. What do you attribute that?
You know, I think Amy Burkett, who is the general manager, has done a great job right-sizing the staff, looking at programming. She's been out raising funds and friends, mm-hmm. And has done just some different things in terms of quality programming.
What is the function of a local public television station in an environment where the average viewer has access to three public TV signals? In a world where cable and satellite bring most of the programming that used to be exclusive to PBS, you can find on the National Geographic Channel and the Travel Channel and the History Channel and et cetera. What's the function of public television?
Well, I'll tell you, I think it's the function of telling the local story as well. Obviously, we bring in some national public broadcasting programs, but I do think if you haven't tuned in lately, back to Opportunity Scholars, Amy has taken on a little project. She did a great show on the Opportunity Scholars program, mm-hmm. by the way, a week or so ago. One of the new programs that she's created is called Doers, Dreamers, and Destiny. And she is following a group of students. In fact, they had their first little session the other day. She's over teaching a course at Vance High School and has really worked with these students on what they're dreaming about. And so she's incorporated a brand new show about that. And it's called Doers, Dreamers, and Destiny. And she's going to follow those students. She had them all do a I Have a Dream speech. They got to go over to WTVI and actually produce each one of their little spots. And so those kids will never be able to do that. So for regardless of public broadcasting in the national landscape, for us at WTVI in Charlotte, the purpose is local programming and making sure we're telling the local story. And I think Amy's doing a great job of that. And this one aspect of how she's tying that to the college and how that's tying it back to economic mobility and to the task force report, I think is a great bang for your buck.
Well, I was going to ask you, since Dr. Zeiss, your predecessor, was there for 24 years, where you think this college will be in 24 years, but you only have 5 seconds, and that wouldn't be fair to ask, would it?
We're going to be great.
Okay.
Even more great.
Dr. Candy Dietemeyer, who's the new president of Central Piedmont Community College. Inauguration Day is Friday.
Yes.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 W.